Hi, this episode of Independent RX Forum is sponsored by Novavax.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent RX Forum. I'm your host, John Beckner, and I'm here today at the NCPA annual meeting with Ed Cohen. Ed, it's great to have you on.
Hello, John. It's great to be here today, and greetings to all of our listeners who are joining us. It's exciting to be at the annual meeting and be with the independent community group to learn about all of the new enhancements to practice.
Yep, excited to be here with you in sunny Orlando, and things are off to a great start with our annual meeting. I just came off of the exhibit floor, which is very crowded, very busy. People are engaged in conversations and, stepped away to have a conversation with you about immunizations.
Well, John, thank you for that. And it seems to be our annual activity at the annual meeting. So I'm excited about this conversation. A lot of new things to talk about.
And I want to start out with talking about COVID vaccine. It's been almost 4 years since the pandemic started, and we seem to be in a much better place now than we've ever been. Hospitalizations are down, deaths are down significantly lower than in previous years. I think we have a level of immunity in the population and updated vaccines. And that's what I want to begin our conversation with, is talking about the updated vaccines. I think we really are dealing from a position of strength now as compared to the past. We've got several options with regard to COVID vaccines. Why don't you kick things off and talk about those? And I know there's some differences between these vaccines.
Well, yes, John. We do have our mRNA vaccines. Both Pfizer and Moderna have had their vaccines in the marketplace for the past 4 years. Today, we see a new monovalent, new strain-focused vaccine that's being offered. And I will proudly state that I got my vaccine just last week. And in addition, for those who may have reservations for an mRNA vaccine, we do have the new vaccine that we've just got a emergency use approval made by Novavax, the protein-based vaccine that's available as well. So we really are addressing all the needs of the public, and I want people to know that these are safe and effective vaccines, and you do have a choice now as well.
Yeah, I think it's the information about the Nova vaccine that's a significant development, because a lot of the vaccine hesitancy with regard to the COVID vaccines had to do with the mRNA technology. I think people were concerned about that, and now that they have an option with regard to the protein-based vaccine, I think that's going to hopefully encourage more people to get vaccinated with this new monovalent vaccine. And I think it's also important to point out, this is not a booster. I think a lot of people call it a booster, but it really isn't a booster. It's a new vaccine. We really ought to think about it just like we do the seasonal flu vaccine. People get a new flu vaccine every year to protect themselves against the flu. And, hopefully people will begin to look at the COVID vaccine in a similar fashion.
Well, I sure hope to that effect, because as we know, the flu vaccine has traditionally just been that. People go to the store and get their flu vaccine. They never really focused on brands or technology or different strains or strengths. They've just gone in and said, I'm here for my flu shot. And it'd be nice to see the public get to a point where they go in and get their flu and COVID shots together, and not worry about all the rest of the details that they have not considered in the past.
Exactly. And I think you touch on a really important point. Co-administration is really important. I think a lot of us have seen the commercials on TV, the one where Travis Kelce from the Kansas City Chiefs is getting two vaccines. He's getting his seasonal flu vaccine. He's getting his COVID vaccine. And, you know, hopefully things like that are really going to encourage more people to get multiple vaccines if they indeed need those.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that more in a minute, but I think we should stick with the vaccine conversation for now and COVID vaccine and introducing that co-administration with flu. I think we have a great opportunity to use all that flu vaccine that's being produced. I know there's 150 to 170 million doses that's being produced and shipped out to pharmacies and doctor's offices all over the country. You're seeing the inactivated flu, the recombinant flu, live attenuated flu. And again, there really isn't a preference for the traditional flu vaccine for those 64 and under. Any of those vaccines will work, except for the live attenuated, of course, that's for younger individuals. New this season for people 65 and older, there's three different vaccines that are preferentially recommended over the standard dose for seniors. So we have the unjuvenated flu vaccines, the Fluzone high-dose quadrivalent. We have the Flublok quadrivalent as well. And we also have the Fluad quadrivalent, which is an adjuvanted flu vaccine. So there's three different choices for seniors today. And kudos to pharmacy systems that when a patient is coming into the store, pharmacy systems can identify someone that's 65 and older and remind the pharmacist that these are the preferential vaccines for seniors.
Yeah, and I think the senior population has done a pretty good job of getting vaccinated. The rates in that age group tend to be much higher than in other age groups. So we've done a pretty good job with that group, and we need to try to replicate the rates in the younger population, the middle-aged adults and also adolescents.
Yes, that would be good. But, you know, I think there is a huge segment of the pharmacy stores that are doing that well. I can't say all the stores are focused on, you know, the 19 to 64 cohort, but I believe many of your members at NCPA are focused in that age group and do a great job immunizing not only seniors, but the 19 to 64-year-olds as well.
Well, as you know, Ed, one of our goals at NCPA is to make immunizations a core competency of our pharmacies. And I think a lot of our educational efforts, our communication efforts are really targeted toward giving our members all the resources that they need to really do a good job in the immunization space. So I feel real good about what's been done to date. We've got a lot more work to do, but I think things are certainly headed in the right direction. I want to back up for just a minute. And, you know, we talked about the Novavax protein-based vaccine and ask you a question. If someone has completed is up to date on their vaccines and say they've gotten either Moderna or Pfizer, are there any issues with this new vaccine switching over to the protein-based Nova vaccine? Any issues with that?
Well, the fact that it is a new vaccine, it's not a booster, leads to the point where if somebody came into the pharmacy and wanted to get an immunization, COVID immunization today, and wanted Novavax, I don't believe there would be a problem. Right. I think that it would be appropriate to recommend it and proceed with that.
Very good. Very good. I appreciate you clarifying that. So, you know, we talked a little bit about COVID. We talked about seasonal influenza or flu vaccine, talked a little bit about co-administration. There are also some other vaccines that are available now that people are asking for. They're available. The new vaccine for RSV is out. Can we talk a little bit about that?
We sure can. The RSV vaccine is actually it's an interesting vaccine because it's been approved for two different manufacturers for two different populations. So let me clarify that a bit. The RSV vaccine, new this year, is the recommendation for those 60 and older, especially those that have an array of chronic conditions, diabetes, CHF, COPD, et cetera. They are recommended to get a single dose of RSV. The RSV vaccine, the Pfizer Abrysvo, has also been recommended for pregnant women to receive in any time between the weeks of 32 and 36 during their pregnancy. So it's two different populations and two different opportunities for pharmacy to help people to fight off this serious deep lung infection. So there is a point of additional clarity to add is that for the 60 and older group, the recommendation is not just a blanket recommendation where pharmacy can just go and say, Mrs. Jones, I've got your RSV vaccine in stock. It's time for your shot. There has to be a conversation, a shared clinical decision between the patient and the pharmacist before that patient can receive the RSV vaccine. So the pharmacist needs to explain the indications and the need, and the patient needs to agree to that recommendation. And once that has been accomplished, then the pharmacy can administer the RSV vaccine. So there are several other opportunities where shared clinical decision making is involved, but today it's focused on the RSV vaccine.
Yeah, I was going to, I'm glad you brought up shared clinical decision making and explaining exactly what that is. That's a term that's really come into play over the last little bit. I think it started out with maybe the pneumococcal vaccine and helping patients decide if they're a candidate. You mentioned conversations between the pharmacist and the patient, the or other providers such as the primary care physician, ever involved in that shared clinical decision making conversation?
Yes. So the patient can have that conversation with their physician and can come to the pharmacy with a note from the doctor. It sounds kind of silly that you need a note from the doctor, but the doctor can either call the pharmacy or write a prescription or communicate in whatever way they feel necessary to share with the pharmacy that the conversation has been had and the recommendation has been made to get the vaccine or not get the vaccine. So we just need to be aware that those conversations can take place with their anyone in the healthcare team and the patient, and it just needs to be realized before administering the vaccine.
Good. So again, another opportunity for the pharmacist to use their professional judgment for sure. So, Ed, we've talked about COVID vaccine. We've talked about seasonal flu. We've talked about RSV. Touched a little bit on pneumonia. Maybe we need to talk a little bit more about that. But let's say, for the sake of conversation, that Ed comes into the pharmacy and asks for all four vaccines. What should the pharmacist do?
Well, the pharmacist can recommend to get them all at once. There has been some examples. I actually have a colleague that has gotten all four and had no difficulties, two in each arm, as you've seen on the TV commercial.
Other than maybe a little bit of a sore arm, correct?
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, sore arm, maybe some tiredness, but really no serious complications at all from the co-administration. And even if you go on to some of the scheduling tools, they will prompt you and encourage you to receive 1, 2, 3, or 4 recommended immunizations. And no, I've been offered.
No need to space them out. I mean, just sharing a personal story, I recently got my RSV and flu vaccine at the same time. And then I waited a week and got my COVID vaccine and my pneumonia vaccine. So I decided to space it out, but I really didn't have to. I could have gotten all those four at one time, correct?
Yes, sir. Now, we have talked in the past on this exact topic where you have been an advocate of co-administration. And as much as I am an advocate for co-administration, I have spaced out all of my immunizations to a single shot, wasting time and energy to go back multiple times. So in today's busy world, I commend you for doing that, getting two shots at a single sitting and doing it twice, as opposed to my old school thinking where I had to go back four times to get my four shots.
Well, you know, Ed, the important thing is, and certainly to each his own, but the important thing is that you got all four vaccines, albeit you decided to space them out. So the important thing is you were vaccinated and protected against, flu and RSV and COVID and pneumonia. So I commend you for that.
Well, I will add that to all of our listeners, it's as much as we would like to do the co-administration, and it's appropriate, it's been tested. The CDC site does have an array of literature that shows that each vaccine that we're discussing here has been tested so that co-administration is appropriate. However, as we need to be considerate of our patients and their thoughts and desires, we don't want to spook them by telling them that you can get all these and pushing them to do co-administration. If somebody wants to spend that time and the effort and will get immunized, then we should respect that as well. So I'm a big advocate and believe in co-administration. However, we just need to serve our patients, meet them where they would like to be met, and provide the service as they would like it.
So
as we've always done,
I want to touch on the role of technicians. And I attended an educational session this morning about career paths for technicians. And one of those expanded roles for technicians has been administering immunizations. I'd like to talk for a couple of minutes about, how important that is in terms of allowing pharmacists to potentially administer more immunizations, get involved in other clinical services if the technician is able to do that. If you could touch on that for a few minutes, because I think it really is important.
Well, it's usually hugely important. We have done such a great job under the PREP Act where technicians were allowed to immunize. Well, we've done a great job teaching them and enabling them to take on this role and responsibility. I will tell you that over the past 2 or 3 years, I've had technicians provide immunizations. They've done a wonderful job. You would never know unless you asked that they were technicians as opposed to a pharmacist. But we need to work diligently within each of our states to ensure that this privilege is kept in place. It's not a given at the end of 2024, when the PREP Act sunsets, technicians will lose that privilege unless the states have made the proper adjustments to the Pharmacy Practice Act to allow technicians to continue. So we have an army of trained people. The technician role needs to be a career path as opposed to a job, because for you and I, John, as we both know, in order for us to advance to do different roles and responsibilities, moving away from fulfillment, then we need someone to take up the slack of all those jobs that we're not able to do, and that's the technician. So the more trained and able, and the more we give the technicians that privilege to practice in that way in each of the 50 states, you'll see greater success for pharmacy, especially around immunizations, and then leading to taking on additional service offerings outside of immunizations.
Yeah, I'm really glad you made the point about the states, because I've heard so many times over the past 6 months to a year how important it is not to take a step back from all the authorizations, all the good things that happened as a result of the PREP Act. So I think we need to remain vigilant in terms of making sure the state laws and regulations allow pharmacists to practice at the top of their license. And in order for them to do that, you know, there really does need to be an expanded role for technicians. So glad you mentioned the state, the importance of working with the states.
You know, I have to go back to the point you made earlier, that NCPA is encouraging and looking to make immunizations a core competency.
Yep.
And in doing so, embracing the role of the technician and advocating for those changes and working with the states all together and separately to assist them to make these changes to the Practice Act and promote the role of the technician.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Ed, we've got a few minutes left, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't touch on, you know, some of the operational challenges that are going on today. Certainly, pharmacies continue to do extraordinary things with regard to immunizations and point of care testing and things like that. But the current environment is difficult and challenging because of the volume demands. And there are a lot of things going on outside of our particular sector. I know a number of chain drugstores have closed. There's some workplace issues going on, and all these things are leading to, at first glance, would be a good thing in terms of extra business for independent community pharmacy. But at the end of the day, that extra business needs to be profitable business. And there are a lot of prescriptions that are being filled today under cost because of some of the PBM practices and things like that. So it's a challenging time, and you know, I just wanted to bring that up, you know, as an additional item to go along with our immunization discussion, and have you comment on that.
So, John, it's very good that you brought up about the chain stores closing and business transferring to independent community stores. It's a great boost for independent store owners. However, you also brought up that point about filling prescriptions, and they have to be filled at a profit. So that does put some stress on the fulfillment process in those stores. But again, we look at the independent community pharmacy arena as the place where innovation begins. And the opportunity to not only immunize, but to provide an array of other services, med synchronization, adherence programs, do some test and treat programs. These are all very, very important programs for pharmacy. Yet there's a lot of stress in the challenge of, you know, the high volume of prescriptions and being able to balance the workflow within the pharmacy to be able to accomplish not only the fulfillment, but also the ancillary services that we want to provide. And I will say again, and this kind of sounds like a little repetition, but without advancing the role of the technician, not only to immunize, but to be able to take a stronger role in fulfillment, as a pharmacist, I can't get away to go off and have quality time to be able to provide all these other services. And many independents are looking to students and to volunteers, some retired pharmacists coming back and helping them to handle some of their immunization activity. They're hiring part-time pharmacists to do immunizations and some of the other ancillary services because they can't incorporate this into their workflow. So in some areas of pharmacy, it's a very difficult time, as you brought out, with some of the workplace issues and such. But overall, I think pharmacy's got a great opportunity. This, if you look at all of the different programs that we can incorporate and provide these services, it's a great time to be a pharmacist. But on the flip side, you know, our payers are fighting us a bit. Not just a bit, I think our payers are fighting us a lot. And we need to really push the boards of pharmacy to allow those technicians, certified technicians, to step up and take on those roles and responsibilities that they're trained and able to do.
Well said, Ed. I'm not sure I could articulate that any better. I think there are a lot of great things going on in pharmacy when you compartmentalize it. It's a great profession, and a lot of good things are going on with pharmacy in terms of taking care of patients. It's the external factors that are making it a little bit difficult, and that's where the role of NCPA comes in. So we will continue to fight the good fight, and so pharmacists can do the best job they can to take care of patients. Hey, I really appreciate you coming on today. You've been a regular guest. We've done this program together many times, and always enjoy it. And appreciate your wisdom and knowledge, and really love drawing on your experience, particularly in the immunization space.
Well, John, I echo those words right back to you. It's a great experience. Great to see you and be with you. And looking forward to enjoying the rest of the meeting. And thank you for the opportunity to spar a little bit about immunizations.
For more information on the NCPA Annual Convention or NCPA membership, please visit www.ncpa.org.